WKRP Live with Cedric Miller has a desire to transport their listeners to a world of thought upon issues like Christian values, the appeal of Christianity, contracts with God, tenement stories, and so much more. Cedric Miller will be interviewing up-and-coming gospel artists, pastors and community leaders, and people just like you. We're going to figure out, together, what the heck is really going on in society today. It's an open forum, and call-ins are encouraged, so tune in and become a part of the discussion at the global table, where all points of view are considered.
All right, and we are here live on WKRP. Thank you all for tuning in again. I am Cedric Miller, and I have a very great special guest today. His name is Mr. Thad McClemmons from the House of Representatives. Yes, and we will be talking to him about different legislation and different bills and just what's going on and how he feels about things in the community as well. But first off, let me do this commercial for Hayden's Towing and Air and Repair. 24 hours Hayden Auto Sales. His telephone number is 334-727-1215. He has a towing company in Shorter, Alabama. Yes, Mr. Hayden Towing. And also, he sells cars. If you're in the market for looking for an automobile, a good used automobile, hey, give Hayden a call. Number is 334-727-1215. All right, and there we have it. Right now we're going to bring in Mr. Thad McClemmons from the House of Representatives, and we're going to talk with him about, as I said a few minutes ago, about bills and different legislation and passing that's going on right now in the legislature. So, Mr. McClemmons?
Yes, sir.
How are you doing today, sir?
Well, you know, it's a typical day, although I guess this particular session in the legislature is probably not a typical session because, you know, we have a lot of kind of sidebars going on, you know. But, you know, we still are coping, and all of we are down to our last 3 days for this particular session.
Yes, sir.
We think we should be finishing up next Wednesday, but, you know, basically we had a great education budget. I think someone said it was probably the best one that we had, you know, since 2008. So that was back in the middle of the crash and everything, you know, the financial crash. But so on the education side of the house, you know, we're pretty well satisfied. You always could do better and want to do more. But compared to what we've been facing for the last 8 years, you know, this wasn't a bad year. However, on the general fund side, you know, we're having some crisis. Hopefully, the options are beginning to look a little better. One of the things that we're most stressed out with is dealing with, you know, the expansion of the Medicare. And we started off not too very long ago about $80 million shortfall, $85 million shortfall. You know, hopefully we can get some adjustments and pursue it on a realistic basis because, you know, we have a lot of people with their quality of life and the quality of health, you know, in particular. It's not where it should be, and this is an area that, you know, without a healthy people, you're not going to have a healthy performance in our society. So that's particularly where the children and the elderly are concerned, and particularly the children.
I understand that. You know, that's a big concern right now, especially with Medicaid reform. And I know that the governor kind of cut some, what you said, needed funding back from Medicaid. But, you know, I'm just thinking about the ones that might have to suffer from this effect. You know, it's going to be like a domino effect. A lot of people are not going to be able to, that can't pay for this care. What are they going to do, especially with the children, you know? And I was just, you know, that's a lot on the state's mind right about now, as you were saying.
Well, you know, it's one of the frustrations is that, you know, what's real and what's not real. You know, the thing you have to look at with the governor, you know, that he is a doctor, a physician,
yeah,
in another life. And, mm-hmm. you know, his knowledge about the whole process is a lot different than the average person. So, yeah. you know, one of the things that we looked at a lot, you know, some of the stuff that's rolling out, like the, you know, the regional healthcare delivery systems, you know, it seems, you know, like a transition towards privatization. And that's one of the things I think what happens, you know, usually when you get a lot of anxiety as well. We need to do something. We need to do something. And then you end up getting something. You look down the road 6 months later and say, well, we didn't know this. That we'd be going from a public delivery model to a privatized delivery model. And that's one of the things that some of us are very conscious about is, you know, yeah, we need the service. We need the expansions. You know, but, you know, what price are we paying in the process? Because I thought we even sight on the process, looking at, you know, the possible negative impacts, and rightfully so. So you have to try to maintain the delicate balance at all times.
That is so true. And a lot of people, I think it's kind of scary to a lot of Alabamians and different people about this. You know, we are just still so much in a spotlight, so it's kind of ridiculous. Now with Medicaid, there's a lot going on.
Yes, yeah, a lot going on.
It's a lot going on. And what do you think about also with prior, they want the impeachment process that they're wanting to do with the governor? And what are your feelings about that? I know I heard from, what he said.
Well, let me give you a little backdrop. Number one, you know, we've been on the, what they call them, prison facilities that has a $1 billion tag. So that's one big one, you know, on the side. There's something that's coming in. But it was probably later today that we're dealing with the settlement of BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. That's going to be mega millions. Then we have another piece out there with a proposal about enacting a 6 cent per gallon gas assessment. And that's another many millions. We have another thing of a, what we call a kind of a repurposing of the two-year college system. That's another many millions. You know, all when you add up all of these things that traditionally are not on the agenda, you know, we in some billions, and now, you know, Alabama is like it's only 4 million plus, you know, populated state. So there's more money on the table than normal. And so when you get these other agendas, you have to be able to maintain a delicate balance, you know, which is what and why is what the motivation is concerned. As far as the impeachment situation, the original sponsor of this concept needed 21 votes, and I understand he has 22 as of the last 30 minutes or so. So that means apparently, you know, unless someone comes in and so... Because I've heard some people say, well, I signed it, but I didn't think he was going to get 21. And so I don't know what you're going to have some people to start backpedaling or not, but that's the status now. It would start moving towards the Judiciary Committee, and that's one of the committees that I serve on. So I don't know.
Okay.
You know, if... I'm not justifying... know, what's the nature of the circumstances, but at the same time, I know when you got that many billions of dollars laying on the table for a state as small as Alabama, you know, it becomes cloudy and foggy as to what is reality and what is not reality. What is the real issue? It always comes down to what you have to follow the money.
I understand what you're saying. So let me reword it as what I was saying. So do you think that people, we should just not worry about this and just let that thing just die down and just go and just keep on, like, you know, because what he did, you know, like as someone said, that's a private man, but he's still the governor. And as long as he governs the state accordingly, you know, should we just...
unfortunate, you know, not only the governor, but all of us that, you know, that in public life, basically, the spotlight is a little larger and a little brighter than on the average person, rightfully so. Because in many instances, and I don't know, I'm not going to sit here, you know, and you know, take a role of hypocrisy. It's a question I tell many people now. In a lot of situations, a matter of the call and the uncall. So it's a situation where you look at it and it's hard to, once something happens, you know, it's like you can't unring the bell. And so it's something, regardless of how distraction it may be, is something that you have to maintain, you know, normalcy as much as possible. But at the same time, when you have the type of feedback that we've been getting from this particular issue, it's impossible to maintain normalcy all the time. But you still have to have the challenge of trying to make sure that the state continues on the best course that it can, even with the distractions.
I truly understand. That is so true and so right. You know, because there's a lot of things that's going on, you know, that you all have to put first and foremost before the Alabamians, you know.
Yeah.
And that is so truly understandable. I do understand that, Mr. McClammy. And also, I know that you're working on, you have a lot of things, bills. What bills are you trying to push for the Alabamians that don't know and that would like to know,
well,
you know?
Basically, like I said, the agenda this year has been more, I guess, in many instances, you know, kind of a defensive type thing. One of the foremost agendas that particularly the Black Caucus has had, you know, for the last several years is the impact of mass incarceration, you know, of many of our young people in the state. So we try to make one of the things, for instance, there's a question of in the restoration of voters' rights. There's something in the 1901 Constitution that talks about moral turpitude. You know, that's where, you know, a person can do this with the exception of the crimes of moral turpitude. And that's something that's been going on for a number of years, you know. And the thing that's so amazing is how many, you know, offenses that people can go to prison for, you know, in some instances. We had exceptions of restoration of voters' rights of over 400 different offenses that's under the guise of moral turpitude. And, you know, that's something I spend a lot of time, you know, well, what is this? I mean, how do we define it? What is it? And so until we can really come down, in fact, this comes right back up with this impeachment situation, that impeachable offenses are, and, you know, has some governance of the question of moral turpitude. But if you can't define it, you know, how are you going to defend it? I mean, if you, you know, what is
that? True.
And so that's something been going on since 1901. And now it's coming to the forefront. And so we spend a lot of time with, but we can't leave it until, you know, until we at least come down with something that we can, you know, get a consensus as best as possible. We're gonna, you know, we're not going to get a complete agreement on everything, but we at least have to make it, you know, more workable than it is now and it has been in the past.
That is so true. I believe, you know, as one, I'm the one to believe that once a person has paid their debt, their time to society, then basically I feel like they should go on with their lives to be able to live in peace and be able to enjoy the attributes of everyone else. But unfortunately, because of, I don't know, whatever, well, felony or however it is, they're not allowed, as I would see, to be a citizen. That's like cutting them off from being a citizen.
Well,
vote?
Well, it's like this, you know. I tell people all the time, that's such a thing that's called paid in full in society. You know, if you were to buy a car and finance it, you know, during the process that you're making it meet the financial requirements, there's a lien against the title, but once you finish paying for it, then that lien is satisfied, and at that point you go in and you say you validate, well, it's paid in full, and you no longer make the payments, and you're in a position to do whatever you want to with your car. Same thing in real estate. You buy a home, lower real estate, you know, and it has a mortgage, and therefore it has a lien. But once it's paid in full, it's paid, and you know, and so it should be consistent with anything else. You know, if you do time and you do your time, then you should be paid in full. and you shouldn't have to continue that, you know, continue to be held responsible for something that you fulfill all the requirements. And, you know, and this is one of those things that, you know, it's going to take a while. It's just like, you know, as we look back at the whole, you know, voters' rights piece, we just, last year was the 50-year anniversary of the voters' rights enactment of 1965. And we're still fighting, you know, in many instances at the same posture as we were 50 years ago or 51 years ago. But it's something that, you know, you can't walk away from it, because the longer you stay from it, the longer that you fail to address it, the longer it takes to come up with a palatable solution.
That is so true. And that's just what I was saying, because, you know, a person, a felon or someone, you know, there's so many crimes and different things going on. And some of it has to do with, you know, economic-wise, which I know is because, you know, a person, they were released them out of, let's just say, prison or something, they go look for a job, but because of their background, they won't hire them. And they were like, what else is that person supposed to do? You know, I mean, they can try to take mediocre jobs or get paid on tape, however it is. But I do empathize and sympathize with it. It's rough for those, you know, that try, that want to get back into society and do the right thing.
You have to look at it. You know, even before many people, you know, went into incarceration, the challenges to make what we call a living wage was there. And then once you, you know, go through the process and re-enter society, you know, it's been tenfold, you know, and unfortunately we got out of sales in a situation as a nation, that those within our communities that used to be the producers of products and not become the products themselves. You take a person that pursues, say a minimum wage situation, and say, well, I mean, how much did you contribute to society? And you say, well, okay, it's somewhere between maybe $14,000-$15,000 annually. And then once you go into the state of incarceration, then your value goes up because the incarceration process gets into all of the things where that, you know, individual comes to be a contributor to society and almost 100% greater than if they were pursuing a normal free world role.
Yeah. I do, yeah, that is so true. And like many things, a lot of people get caught up in the system, and it's hard. And being that we're talking about that, we're going to go to a short commercial break. But when we come back, I want to talk to something that you've been in the midst of the fight of with people that have gotten tickets and have been, let's say, don't have the money to pay. They've been going through a lot of things, but there's something I want to talk to you as well about.
Okay.
And the public needs to hear about it if they haven't heard. Okay. We'll be back in a moment. We've got to take a commercial break. And we'll be back with WKRP Live.
Strange, like I don't belong on this road.
All right, we're back with WKRP Live. And that song was by Mr. Todd Delaney. I had a chance to go and see him last Thursday. It was awesome. He is an awesome worshiper, and his album went number one this week. And I just think that's total blessing. And Todd, many more blessings for you. He's a great young man, and I hope to hear more songs. And that's a true song, Unchurched. You know, it talks about people that go into church, and just because they don't wear what other people think they should wear or look like everyone else thinks they should look, then people judge them. And so that's just a song just letting know, that's not being judgmental. God looks at the heart. And we're here live on WKRP Live with Mr. Thad McClemmon, also representative, and we're talking about different issues and different things, folks, that affect us as Alabamians. And Mr. Thad, as I was last leaving off, I was talking to you about something that you yourself are involved in. You're always helping people and trying to open your door. That's one thing I can say about you. You know, you always have a number. You reach out, and you will call back. And he does. He lives by that. And I see why he's been in ever since he was elected in 1994. And he holds the chair, the committee chair, the House Public Safety Committee. Man, and I'm thankful again for him coming on our show and being a guest. Stan?
Well, thanks. We appreciate this opportunity. I think that in many instances, there are many things in the community that what they call becomes kind of isolated, and at the same time, they're very detrimental. I think on this situation that we're talking about now, it's called debtor's prison. It started out here in Montgomery and around the state of Alabama, where the city of Montgomery chose to, I call them bounty hunters, really. They're supposed to be persons that was. But anyway, you know, as it works, and we take what we call a banner year, 2013, we're in the city of Montgomery. The Montgomery Police Department wrote $16 million worth of tickets, of traffic tickets, $16 million.
Ah, God.
Now, when you compare that to the city of Birmingham, the city of Birmingham, that same year, on that same period of time, the city of Birmingham wrote less than $2 million worth, less than $2 million worth. The city of Mobile wrote less than $1.5 million worth. And then the other city that's comparable to our size is the city of Huntsville. And they wrote less than $1 million worth. And we wrote $16 million worth. And we sent hundreds of people to jail because they could not pay the tickets, because in many instances a $200 ticket would end up costing like $2,000 for a $200 ticket. And we finally was able to get, although we got sold out, we took one of these advocate groups that took one person that had been wrong and I suppose it made some kind of settlement with the city of Montgomery that we're going forward. You know, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to send anybody to jail anymore, which was a lie because they continue to do it and still are. And then it brought in a second group that took about 14 plaintiffs out of hundreds of people, you know, that had been wrong and such. And they did what they call a confidential settlement. And at this time, we've been waiting, you know, with a group of what we call a good candidate that they can get before, you know, the courts on a class action basis, because they're literally hundreds of people that have gone to jail unconstitutionally and illegally, and there are many people that have been, you know, wrong with this particular issue. And so we've been at that now with it, you know, it's approaching almost a year and everything, but we're not going to leave it. And I don't know where it would end up, but it's something that is one of the most atrocious situations that, you know, that could exist. I mean, some of the things that's happening in not just Montgomery, but in America are just, you know, unreal. Yeah. And this is one of the ones just really close to the top of the list, probably.
When you said that amount, I'm just astounded. $16 million, which then again, that's a lot of that's a lot of tickets.
That's and look at Birmingham.
And then Montgomery.
That was almost three times the size of Montgomery. I mean, the greater Birmingham area, and they did less than $2 million worth. You know, we average, with the people that's in City Hall now, during that tenure, we average about $14 million worth of tickets a year. With $16 million.
My goodness, how is this possible? Is this legal?
Well, you know, how is it possible that people see it every day and act like it doesn't exist? And the only time they get concerned about it is when someone in their family comes in and says, well, look, you know, my son owes $5,000, particularly my daughter owes $4,000, and when they stop you, you know, they impound your car because you can't, you know, you can't buy a tag, you can't even get the tag for the car because you don't have insurance, you lose the insurance, that you get so many tickets, and then when you get stopped and you don't have, you know, the current insurance, you don't have a driver's license, then you get impounded, your car gets impounded, charge you $200 for the, now that doesn't pay for the cost of towing the car. That pays for you know, when we called, it cost us $200 for them to make the call to the record. Now, when the record come get you, and then the car has to stay impounded until you come back, you know, until you can get a tag or this type of stuff. Well, that's all. I mean, and this is in, you know, the cap of the city of the state of Alabama. Yeah.
That is true. How much down? I mean, I knew it was bad, but I didn't know how bad. Man, that's a, my goodness, that's a lot of people. That's like almost, is that the whole almost population of the center? Capital city, they got to be stopping people just coming through. I don't know, but that's wild. That is totally wild, but, you know, it happened. I don't know many people that have been through that process, and because they didn't have enough
money.
Well,
there's many more. You know, we have a lot of them. Like I said, there's a member of this class who, and we are not, you know, because, you know, by the time you go through all of the legal processes, by the first time you come in,
yeah.
Well, okay, we're going to file a motion to dismiss the suit. Well, that takes 3 or 4 months to go through that process. And then you come back, well, you know, the people that's handling the case, they got a, you know, they caught a cold, so we need a continuance because they're not back to work. You know, so you give them continuous for 30 days, and then come back. So, well, you know, they caught another cold. So we're going to file a motion to continue the case because the people that know the most about it, they, you know, they had a, you know, they got a relapse with the cold. You know, this kind of stuff. I mean, so there's many legal ways you can extend something like this indefinitely almost. But we'll still be there, you know, when they finish with all of the maneuvers and all of that. You know, we'll still be there. And we have, you know, we have hundreds of people that's in this category that would be there with us.
Well, I hope so. And you have, my goodness. And you've got to let us know how that turns out because, man, that is astounding. You know, yeah. And some people really want to pay. They just don't have the means to pay if they do get it. And hey, how are they going to work when they're locked up?
Well, that's the thing. This is so stupid about this whole situation. The Montgomery County, including the city of Montgomery, at this point, every household in this city has reached upper capital level, a level we call a level of standard of living, that every household is eligible in the school market for free lunches, free breakfasts, and free, you know, the city of Montgomery, in all the time that I lived here, has never had a per capita income as low as it is as we speak. Because when you look at, you know, a lot of people say, well, what happened? Well, in, you know, when you start making assessments of how this one thing has impacted on people, in some instances, they can't get a job because in many instances, it requires a driver's license you no longer have. Or when it gets to a point that you cannot drive your own automobile because you're afraid that when you go around the corner, and we have situations, these horror stories where people get every day almost when they pull into that driveway, you have a cop that's sitting down the street, comes in, and open the door. And, like, you know, and so, well, you don't have your seatbelt on. Well, how are you going to get out of the car if you got a seatbelt on? You know, craziness like this. And you got people that get, you know, 5 and 6 tickets at one time. You know, and so, well, okay, tag expired, no insurance, and this and that. And the other one's seatbelt wasn't on. And, you know, it just gets to the point of being ridiculous. And then the thing that you know, that people don't realize now, you know, we have this cop shooting case here, and I tell people, you know, when you start these abusive practices within your communities, they escalate. You know, they go from one level to another level, and all these things impact. And in many instances, a lot of people that want to pursue positive futures, they start looking at saying, well, I don't think I want to be here. I think I'm going on to Atlanta, or I'm going to Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm going to Nashville, Tennessee, or something. And so you start producing a brain drain in your community. And that's what we're suffering from now. You know, when you're in a situation, you know, and I'm one of these, you know, staunch advocates of what the Voters' Rights Initiative is supposed to be about. You know, I was a student here in 1965. And, you know, then when I look at, you know, what the community is the status of it, you know, 50 years later. And we got more people in unemployed. We got more people on food stamp lab. We got more people in all this that we had 50 years ago. That's ridiculous. In fact, the city of Montgomery is number 49 among the poorest capital cities in America. Mm. I don't know. I think it's Wyoming or West Virginia. Somebody's number 50. But we're number 49 among capital cities in America. And we've always been there.
Yeah,
we've not always been there.
Got to be.
And the unfortunate thing is, we have more black elected officials per capita, probably with the exception, I think, of the state of Mississippi. And the unfortunate thing is that, you know, is that unless it's something that gets, you know, we find our own household, most people just want to tend to ignore and want to accept the fact, well, we didn't know it was that bad until it hits home. And then everybody act like they're surprised that it's something that you know, that they just discovered. But it's something that
you're right.
That many people are constantly ignoring it. In fact, this debtor's prison thing, we first got involved in back around 2010. And at that time, they were dealing with these massive roadblocks. And we used to do a lot of what they call town hall meetings in nightclubs and et cetera. And we used to, you know, because a lot of times they'll say, why are you going there? Because that's a situation that that people can, express themselves about what we call unusual scrutiny. And the number one thing at that time in 2010 was, can y'all please get the cops to stop throwing roadblocks on Sundays? What do you mean on Sundays? Mm. Well, they were stopping people going to church and people coming back from church. So I said, what about on Saturdays? What about on Fridays? What about on Thursdays? What about on Wednesdays? What about on Wednesdays? I mean, on Tuesdays and Mondays. Now, why would you have these roadblocks? And this was leading up, because at that time they probably were right, around 12 million off with them a year and et cetera. And, these are the levels that start. And when you go when you let things like this go unimpeded for so long, then it has a tendency to get worse.
That's so true. Wow. So you're right. So it's hard to believe, but I know it's perpetrated. You've been through, you saw it. And, I don't know. I pray that the thing with the police and the people get better. I just pray we just need some more good officers out there. Not saying that all of them are bad, but you just need because, like they said, to become a police officer, you have to be a standard almost citizen, no prior conviction, But now it's like, okay, they're no better. Almost some of them are no better than Miss Fallon, because they're doing what they want. They don't want on the force to do. I don't know.
It's not that people are anti. Police. Maybe you have to have police, and that's some good. But have a situation when the attitudes of subordinates reflects what the attitude of those in authority. When you have a situation that's prevailing, we can do what we want to do. Well, if you think that we're at the top, everybody below you thinks, well, we're not going to worry about this because my supervisor, so we can do what we want to do. And that's one of the unfortunate things. That's when, these breakdowns, massive breakdowns in society. We saw a lot of this in, Ferguson and, Missouri is one, the cities that, amplified a lot of these type of things. And then they moved over to Baltimore, then they moved over to Cleveland, then they moved over in Chicago, and they moved on. Many communities are having these types of situations, but until they got the mass media, put a spotlight on it, we just had a tendency to, it's going like out of sight, out of mind. And until it comes before the nation and comes before the world, and people start taking, more attention to it. And now that we have political season, with the presidential primaries and things going on, you'll see more of it in the next several months, particularly through the elections in November.
That is so true. Just like I was saying, there are like good and bad, because I have a lot of our friends that work on the force, and I have a lot of friends that work in federal marshals, and they tell me about different things. You know, I'm not just, we're not picking, trust me, we're not just picking on the officers. I know they put their lives in jeopardy as well as the civilian people seem like they're putting their lives in jeopardy too as well, because I was always brought up to respect the law, and, you know, and I think it goes vice versa. The law also is supposed to respect that person. You know, it says, what does it say?
Well, you have to give respect to give respect. You know, everybody, you know, a lot of people have this thing, well, even if this case, this gun case that I was talking about, the great gun case, a lot of his lawyers, you know, running his mouth talking about where he decided his own fate when he didn't do what the officer said. But how do you shoot a man five times? It's on the arm, and he's walking on his property and shooting in front of him, you know. Bases on home, that's, you know, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I was going to talk to you about that as well, you know, with the Gregory Gale situation and how things, because some weeks ago, you know, Daryl Bailey was on them. We kind of touched bases on that as well. And my thing was that, too, you know, it seems, I don't know, man, kind of crazy that how can you shoot someone that many times? You know, and we call that...
He's on a home.
Yeah, he's unarmed. I mean, why do they have tasers? If that's the case, then we do
well,
have
tasers. Well, they came and tased him, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know. But, I don't know. I think we're coming close, you know, because what happened, you know, they turned it over to the State Bureau of Investigation, and they found
that's
probable
correct.
Cause. And they not only found it, they arrested him, you know. And,
yes, they did. Yeah.
And now they, you know, they are saying that, and, you know, at first they were saying, well, we can't do anything because the FBI, and FBI said, hey, you're not going to put this money on our back. You know, we're going to give you a report. Not only are we going to give you a report, we're going to find a problem, and we're going to arrest him ourselves. And that's what they did. MPD did not arrest him. You know, the State Bureau of Investigation.
That's correct.
And now
that's correct.
They want to... want to come up with the same, you know, craziness with the Department of Forensics, you know, state agency. And we should be getting back what forensics was asked to do. They completed their whatever they're supposed to be doing. And then they gave them an additional assignment, and they should be finished with that by the end of this week, which is this week. You know, the end of this month is this week. And at the most, probably about another week, they would be finished again with what they was asked to do. You know, they had completed what they was asked to do, and then they gave them two more assignments. And so their position is just like with the FBI. You know, the state is not going to be blamed for the reason that the MPD can't do whatever they're supposed to be doing or the district attorney's office. Because everything that they've asked, you know, the SBI brought in many, many people on all levels, including the FBI. They said, kind of, we are not going to take the rap that nobody can say anything because we have not finished our reports. And so, you know, and that's the situation. Although at one time, you know, prior to 2010, in fact, I was the chair of the Public Safety Department, and we organized the Homeland Security piece off the Public Safety. So we have a lot of people, you know, that I'm very proud of during the time that, you know, they was on our committee for about, you know, a total of 8 years, that we put a lot of good people, you know, in those law enforcement agencies together. Now we, you know, now since they've been out from under us for about, you know, since 2010, some of them, you know, may not be what we like for them to be, but I know that we did make a difference about the fact that we did organize Homeland Security, and it was a kind of a thing that, you know, that was kind of tedious because a lot of people, you know, they thought that, you know, that we said, well, we don't know how we're going to adjust, you know, to being under the, we said, control of the Black Caucus. And, we were proud of things that we did, and I think they have been about people that came in during their time are still doing great jobs.
Yes, they are, man. Because dealing with the MPD, I know the chief came up under some kind of scrutiny from his, I believe, fellow officer with the MPD because they wanted to impede the investigation. They wanted to, you know, and then another week came and said they were going to do their own investigation instead of hiring someone, you know, from somewhere else. So I'm trying to figure out how
well,
that comes to play.
Well, they get to go around with it. You know, they think about it, it's not going to go away. And that's not the, you know, it's not going away, you know, because there's too many people. And it is not going to, you know, a lot of times, like I say, it's out of sight, out of mind. And if you stay out of sight long enough, you know, people have a tendency to, so it, you know, it's sort of start taking a lower level of priority. But this, you know, just not going away. Because right now, all the things everybody said they're waiting on, well, you know, they come around the curve and they're going to have whatever they say they need. And it ain't going to be very long. I mean, anytime I know something going to hang out there, no year. In fact, like this guy, he's still on the payroll at that city. All they talking about, well, it may be something. No, it ain't going to be no whole lot of months. It ain't going to be no couple of years before they, you know, before it's going to be in their hands, in their laps. And I assure you, we're not just going to sit by and let it just sort of fade off into the sunset.
No, it's not. It's not, because as I was telling Darren Bailey one time, I said, you know, the people want justice. I know you have a hard job to do, but people just want justice, you know, not to put it up on the rug or anything, which he hasn't. And he's spoken about how he feels about that situation. That's one thing I can't say. And also, in the future, I want to have some of the Gunn family, if they would, to come on. I want to interview them and talk about the situation today. This sad situation, they've lost their brother, their loved one, you know, and it's unfortunately that it had to be this way. But I pray that there will be some resolve quickly to this situation. I do pray that, and I really do. Because
well, I can assure you that it's that just because the community has what we call given the process an opportunity to work does not mean. That community is not anxiously waiting, and that is, you know, that is not going to be out of mind, out of sight, out of mind.
That's correct. All right, I feel you on that. And also on a more different note, you were the first one, I believe, which I know, and I was surprised to propose the Rosa Parks Act that would serve as a symbolic purpose of restoring pardon, you know, on activists, but the ethnic Rosa Parks. You're the first one that did that, for to help different
actors. Well, the thing that happened, you had so many people whose careers were derailed during the, you know, during the civil rights movement. You know, particularly starting with Montgomery Bus Boycott. You had a number of people that every time they would come up, you know, it's just like what we call checking the box. Well, every time they checked the box, you know, normally that was the end of the conversation. You had many people whose careers were cut short, and many of them that the careers basically just terminated before they ever got started. And as you know, there was a lot of, you know, back at one time here, there was like 100 people that was arrested at one time that was supposed to have been participating in what they call the legal boycott and all that. And so you had a lot of people that, you know, they picked up cases, and ultimately they suffered financially. You know, all of those years, because once it got there, that they, you know, had been arrested, you know, in a conversation. And so, we, you know, thought that the least we could do, that those that put themselves out there, not only did they risk their lives, but they risked their careers, that they should be made whole. And so, you know, we were successful in getting individuals in a parsonage to be pardoned. Upon that request. And now the unfortunate thing is that we've had a lot of people say, well, it's a we don't want to pursue because it's a badge of courage or this type of thing. Well, you know, it does not diminish anybody's courage or system. It's a matter that at least it gives society an opportunity to right the wrongs of, you know, of many people across, you know, the state. That you know, that has suffered economically all of the, you know, during that period of time. So the you know, if we named the act after Mrs. Walsh because basically she you know, had the courage, and she paid a price because ultimately she lost her job, and she got to the point, even though her husband was a barber, he was pretty much independent, but he supported her in, you know, moving from the state of Alabama. And actually, you know, I can assume that they both loved the state of Alabama, but it got to the point that it just was not economically feasible for them to remain.
Yeah. And that is something else. But she was a very historic person, and I look back and I see different, you know, how we look at films and different things about like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and all those actors, man, that basically that gave their life to help see. They had a vision. God gave them a vision to help. And they put their own lives at risk for doing that. And so we do have, we have to have a high respect for that. And I thank God that you did propose such a bill of bestowing pardons on different activists. And like you're saying, and, they went through a lot. They needed it. Because if you hadn't, I wonder what would have happened. They weren't pardoned.
Well, that's good. You know, it's like this whole thing now about all these thousands of people that have completed their sentences. They have completed their restitution. They completed all the coke costs and everything, and they are still being compromised on the issues like moral turpitude. But it's something that you know, we have to stay the course until we resolve, you know, issues like this. And the unfortunate thing is that when you look at you know, one of the things that we took on some years ago, and that was a lot of people said, well, you know, well, we got the civil rights, we got the human rights, but we don't have economic rights. You know, since I've been in the legislature, the other time that I've served, you know, we basically created the automotive industry in the state of Alabama. You know, the only place that right now that I perform the number of automotive experiences in the state of Michigan itself, and they're kind of like their, you know, their home of the automobiles. And but at the same time, when we have the individuals whose rights have been compromised, Montgomery is still the poorest, number 49 among the poorest in the United States. Because when you get in the scene where you have when a person is an ex-felon, and this type of thing, they don't get the jobs. All right, they do, they go to a situation that we call temporary employees, where you have employment services that contract to furnish individuals to work, say, for $15 an hour, and the person that's performing the work might get $8 at the most. And even though we brought in just in Montgomery with Hyundai alone, you know, we're talking about $1 billion-plus development in this community and the people that we were concerned about bringing in, many, many of them are not able to take advantage of the opportunities. And this is one of the things, you know, a lot of people say, well, why do you continue to do that? Well, you know, there's still so many injustices that are out there. There's so many opportunities that the people that live within our community, you know, within the city of Montgomery or within the rural areas of Lyons County or Dallas County or Bullock County, et cetera, that we went out there and, you know, and fought to bring the opportunities. Then when the opportunities got here, they are not being afforded to the people that need it the most.
Amen. That is so true. And my prayer is that things will change, and, you know, we just have to trust in the Lord. Also, we have to push and help make a change as well. As I was talking to a person today, Dr. Bryant, I would mention her and her husband, Bishop Bryant, coming in soon, May the 26th through the 28th, will be Spiritual Warfare Revival. It'll be nightly with Miss Karen Abercrombie, that played Miss Clara, will be in Montgomery, Alabama, at Word of Life Church, and a host of different pastors, Arnie Shipp and Pastor Johnny Worthy,
They'll all be here coming in this next month. I pray that everyone will come out to this spiritual revival because it's a day of prayer and just people, pastors and preachers, and coming together, you know, as a body of Christ. So I admonish you, and I ask you all, please come out, because we are in need of serious prayer. There's so much going on. And so the people need to take heed, you know, to come out there May the 26th through the 28th, p.m. nightly, with Karen Abercrombie will be here to play Miss Clara on the War Room. And also she has a new movie coming out called God's Compass. And that's, and the sponsors of that is Miss Debbie Bryant and Bishop Bryant. Just come out and you all will enjoy. I promise you. Come out and enjoy. We will be there. WKRP Live will be there in the house as well. And my beautiful wife, Miss Elena Miller, will be one of the singers on the show, and there's a host of different other people. So I advise you guys, come out. It's time for change in Alabama. We're going to go to a, as I said, short commercial break again, and we'll be back. We're going to wrap things up with our very special guest, Mr. Stan McClendon. Thank you.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge bringing humanity closer to truth. BBSRadio.com.
All right. Thank you, guys. We're back from WKRP Live, and my very special guest host today, man, I thank him so much for being here today, is Mr. Thad McClendon. Thad, do you have any closing words you'd like to tell the people, say to the people?
Well, I appreciate this opportunity to, you know, to share some of the experiences that, you know, that we've had, you know, that we've been blessed to be a part of. And we know that we had no way at the victory line in some instances. We are having to, you know, typical example, some of the things that we toil with, it's just like starting back, you know, starting. But at least we, you know, we learned a lot of things, you know, during the journey, and hopefully this will help expedite that it would not take as long to bring some things to close as it has in the past, because at least, you know, we've seen a lot of these situations, and we have learned how to be, you know, effective as much as possible. So I'm just glad that God has enabled us to be a part of bringing forward some positive results, and we know that if we stay out there, that He, you know, we don't come too far now for Him to leave us. So we just,
amen.
Be a bless for the opportunities that we've had.
All right, and I hope to have you back in the future as well, man. Tell us about the progress of things that's going on with you in the battle. With getting people with their tickets and debtors court, you know, just I just hope that some people will come out
surprised. You know, once we get some court dates set and et cetera, because we'll be needing to reach out and try to find some of these people. That's also, you know, that's. I've gotten very frustrated over these, you know, last several years. And we know that, you know, God knows that they are out there. And He knows that that a lot of them will bow. And sometimes we are forced into situations that in order to get relief, we have to pray longer and pray harder. And so, you know, that He knows, yes, He knows that we're still here. We know He knows the challenges that we still have. But the main thing, He wants to galvanize with our minds and hearts that we can't do all these things by ourselves, that we must reach out That's to each other, and above all, we must always keep him in front.
Amen to that, my friend. And again, thank you so much for taking out of your busy schedule to come join us and my listeners on WKRP Live. And until next week, y'all, you know, keep what he says in mind. Trust him. We can't do everything in our own strength, but the God that we serve, he's able to do exceedingly above us of all things that you can imagine. So until next Thursday, you all be blessed, and I pray that you have a great week and weekend out, and we'll talk to you again. I am T. Miller. We are WKRP Live Talk. We're out.